Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Step blocked by Jaylen Brown.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics
Show. Over the shoulder pass for Al Horford for the two-hand slam.
With Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The idea before was to get Jaylen Brown going to the rim, but there were two guys waiting for him. So, the Celtics do not have a timeout. Derek White will have to get it in here with Horford, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Grant Williams on the floor. Derek White has it. 5-second count begins. It's in safety to Tatum. 6 seconds to go. Boston down one. Tatum against Jeremy Grant. Switches to the right hand. Elevates 18 feet. Jumper. No good. Rebound. Stewart, and the ball game is over. And the Detroit Pistons, 12-45, are the ones who come to Boston and snap the Celtics win streak.
Give them full marks for that. They shot the heck out of the basketball. They played just enough defense to come through. And the thing that, you know, in this game late is that you saw Celtics revert back to what we talked about before, ISO basketball. And ISO basketball, instead of moving it, hitting the other guy, that's what kind of killed them.
Sports Up Celtics Show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Brian Robb of Mass Live, covering the Celtics, and you at 617-779-0985. That's a final call here in the Sports Hub with Sean Graney and Cedric Maxwell from Wednesday night with the Pistons, the lowly, awful, arguably the worst team in the NBA, Detroit Pistons, stunning the Celtics 112-111. And I think Cedric nailed it there at the end that what happened there, Chris, is that they reverted to lazy ISO hero ball, and they fell back to who they are at times. And I feel like who they are at their core is, unfortunately, it's like selfish players who want to be the heroes. And it showed that they'll still melt down when someone punches them in the mouth. And that's what's so frustrating for me personally, too, because I had bought in. After they blew out the 76ers, I said going into it, I'm not going to put an asterisk on this because they don't have James Harden. The way that Joel Embiid has been playing, like if they win tonight, that's a statement game. And they blew the doors off of that team. It wasn't even close, you know, halfway through the first quarter. You know, the 9-game winning streak, they look like the best team in the league. The East feels wide open. I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to dive in here. I've looked at them as kind of just a frustrating team to watch. I've referred to these last couple of years as the downward slope, the ski slope Celtics. But it looks like they turn things around. They make the move for Derek White. Feels like they've played better basketball. Marcus Smart has figured things out. He feels like the Marcus Smart of 4 or 5 years ago, and then they go out like that. That's the final game before the All-Star break, and it looked like every bad loss to a wretched team for the first couple of months of the season. And it's just, that doesn't undo the 9-game winning streak, but it was very red flaggy, and I can't get that out of my mind.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, disappointing way to go into the All-Star break. But I still think, you know, overall, I mean, you look at it, you look at the win streak, you look at where they're at. I mean, this is a team that was 25-25 after 50 games. And for the most part, they did what they were supposed to do, which was capitalize on the bad teams and the banged up teams that they faced. And they had, you know, they became the first team in NBA history to notch 3 consecutive road wins by 30 points or more when they blew out Philadelphia. So I take more from the Philly win than I take from the Detroit loss. I like the way that they're looking. I think they can get themselves out of the play-in, which is about where they should be. So, you know, micro, they've turned the season around. Macro, I still don't think they're a title contender, and I think there's still moves that need to be made in the offseason. And I think Brad Stevens has set them up to do that. What he did at the trade deadline, I think, was good. I think there's redundancy between Derek White and Marcus Smart at the end of the day. And so if they need to make a move, if they need to do something in the offseason, they're in good position. They're in a better position now than they were before the trade deadline, both moving forward for this year and moving forward for the offseason. So, yes, the old Celtics sort of reared their head a little bit in that loss to the Pistons. But also, you know, how many times is a team going to shoot 53.3% from three? I mean, that's just not going to happen a lot. And the three is the great equalizer in the NBA. So I think this one was more of an anomaly as opposed to the Celtics regressing back to who they were when they were 25-25 after that loss to Portland.
What about blowing that 8-point lead late though? So I get it. Like, yeah. They're down Robert Williams. So like defensively.
And Smart.
Yeah, so defensively they're not going to be what they normally are. But to blow that 8-point lead that late, it was like once they went up, I was like, okay, I went to make myself a sandwich. I came back and it was tied again. I'm like, what the hell happened? I had to rewind it and see the implosion. It just, that felt, again, like what I had seen before. So that doesn't concern you?
Yeah, it does concern me, But I don't think it's going to be as endemic at the end of the day as it was earlier in the season. Look, we obviously know they have that capability, that trait. Unfortunately, it's part of their team. It's part of who they are. And it will rear its head from time to time. And that's something you have to worry about. But I don't think it's going to start happening time and time again like it was before, especially with sort of the way they've been able to buttress the bench a little bit, bringing in Derek White and when they're fully healthy. I do think the overall issue with the Celtics is, to me, is this. And you sensed a little bit of this, I think, in the podcast appearances of Smart and Tatum. There's a sense of self-accomplishment there. There's a sense that they're better than they really are. And that shows up sometimes at the end of these games where they feel like, well, we just threw the knockout punch. You know, that team's not even going to try and get up off the mat because they know we're the real heavyweight and we're better. They think they're better than they are. And sometimes that opens the door to losses like that. And that, I think that's a psychological issue for them. I think it's a longer term issue, but I think they're going to be able to get away with it more based on what the composition of the team is at this point. And the most encouraging thing to me that I've seen has been that, you know, Tatum and Brown are playing better together. And maybe that wasn't the case in this particular game, even though we got 31 from Jaylen and 22 from Tatum, but they seem to be playing better together. And that's ultimately the most important thing for the Celtics this year. Bigger than wins and losses, playoff seeding, whatever happens, it's Brown and Tatum committing to each other, which they seem to be committed, and learning to play together, and they seem to be making progress there.
So you don't, your perspective wasn't changed, though, that they can be a legitimate title contender?
No,
during
God,
this.
No. No.
What about a deep run? Like, where do you tier them? Where do you put them in the East right now?
Yeah, I mean,
Because to me, they're third in the East to me right now. Like, I leave Brooklyn to the side because they're just an unknown as to right now. And if Durant isn't going to be back, then forget it. They're done. But I put them behind Milwaukee and Philly, or flip it, but whatever. It's the whole league. I go Phoenix, Golden State, Memphis, Milwaukee, Philly, Celtics as of right now. I just don't think that, especially the East, it's just not, it's kind of a down year for the league.
I would put them, so I would go Milwaukee, Philly. I put them behind Milwaukee, Philly, Miami, and Chicago.
That Chicago thing, and I know that they've been playing over the heads, and it's been a resurgent year for DeMar DeRozan. I can't take that seriously.
Well, I mean, they're a little banged up, right? So they're missing Patrick Williams. Yeah. They should get him back for better depth. They'll get Lonzo Ball back. That's the way I look at it with the Celtics. You know, to me, this is, I'm not saying this is the Bridgey Celtics, but this reminds me of past Celtics teams where they're built to win in the regular season on a night-to-night basis, but beating some of these other teams in a seven-game series is a whole different ball game. My guess would be the Celtics go out in the second round. Yeah. I think they win a round and then they're out.
B-Rob, where are you on this team covering for Mass Live? Has your perspective changed? Did this 9-game winning streak get the rug pulled out from underneath it, and it makes it look like fool's gold because they lose to Detroit on Wednesday?
It's a little scary. The end-of-game stuff, to your point, Jim, is scary because that's been there all year long, and it's been there for going back to the bubble. And so when Jaylen Brown makes the right pass to the corner to Al Horford of 30 seconds left, you're like, yes, all right. And then right. like 20 seconds later, drills into two guys and gets his butt blocked. That's the kind of stuff you think, okay, are they going to really learn enough here and do enough things consistently down the stretch of these games to be a real threat in the Eastern Conference? But big picture, guys, I don't know. 18 of 23 overall, Marcus Smart, before he got hurt, you know, that was, I think, the best stretch of his career, period.
He was playing exceptionally well. He really was.
And so you look at that, you look how White has kind of slid in here, and yeah, I'm skeptical that they can be a real contender, but you get the right draw in the Eastern Conference playoffs, which is wide open to your, like you said, Jim. Like, I could see Eastern Conference Finals definitely if you see the Cavs in the first round and the Bulls in round two.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to win a 7-game series against Philly, and I know that they can be dumb, and you know, Mike certainly doesn't believe in him, Felger doesn't believe in him, but the way Embiid's playing, he's arguably the MVP of the league. So, you know, and now let's see how that Harden thing meshes. If he tries for the next few months, like, I don't expect you to beat Philly in a 7-game series. Same with Milwaukee as the reigning champion. You shouldn't lose to Cleveland, who's been playing over their heads this year. Or even that Chicago team, who, is, again, I still kind of look at a side eye. It reminds me of those, my Hawks, you know, when I was down there 2012, 2013, Chris. Like, those teams you knew once they ran into a real team with real stars come playoff time, like, they were going to get waxed, and that's what happened. So, no, I don't know. Like, call me a sucker. And that's how I felt Wednesday night when they lost to Detroit. I felt like a sucker, but I take more out of the 9-game winning streak than I do on Wednesday night. Yes, red flaggy, but considering the East and how it looks this year, they should go on a deep run. Win the championship? No, but a deep run, maybe a couple of series. 617-779-0985, the phone number. We will get into some of the comments made by Jason Tatum on the Old Man and the Three podcast. Great name.
Yeah.
From J.J. Redick.
Can you believe people like J.J. Redick now? Remember, he was one of the most hateable college players? Then he starts this podcast, and everybody's like, I like J.J. Redick.
Yeah, well, see, a podcast can change minds.
Yeah, there you go. That's why everyone should have a podcast, like you believe.
Well, everyone already does, Chris. Yep, no, it's the oversaturation of our lifetimes. I got a podcast. Do you want to join me on? No. 617-779-0985, the phone number. We'll get to that comment. Some of the comments made by Jason Tatum coming up next.
1 hour each week at noon on Saturdays. The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic
Deep
Show.
Three. Got it.
With Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Up Celtic Show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Brian Robb, Mass Live, and you at 617-779-0985. Celtics in the All-Star break. Quickly, do you still care about this thing? Even now, Chris? Like, I know since we've worked together, you always get geeked for the All-Star break. Like, yay! But, like, even now? Now yes. That you're in your deep into your 40s?
I was, like, so disappointed to learn. I was, like, flying, and I realized, I was like, wait, the Rising Stars game, this new format is tonight? I missed the Rising Stars?
Ugh.
So I was bummed out by that. And I don't even know. I need to get up to speed. But what I heard that they sort of have reconfigured All-Star Saturday night, right? Like the skills competition is different.
I'll defer to you, B-Rub. I don't watch this crap.
I can't even tell you at this point. But I will say that, I did see some positive. They reconfigured last night too, the Rising Star games. And there was some positive feedback on Twitter about that. So I wonder if they actually are finding something here.
Yeah, so everything starts at 8. State Farm All-Star Saturday night. It's on TNT. So there's the skills challenge, the three-point contest, and the slam. Yes, I care about this. This is something that 10-year-old Chris cared about the most. And, 30 years later, I still care.
All right, I want your thoughts on some of the commentary made by Jason Tatum in the Old Man and the Three, the J.J. Redick podcast that sneaky rips off the title of the famous Hemingway book. By the way, the Hemingway house in Key West, you've never been? Good time. A lot of cats. All right, here's Jason Tatum on the talk of breaking up he and Jaylen Brown.
There's been chatter. There's been a contingent of people that have, in the media, fans, NBA Twitter, that have talked about breaking you guys up, trading one of you. Do you two talk? Do you talk with JB about that? Is there an open dialogue about that?
Yeah, we've had plenty of talks. I think it's really picked up this year, especially from the beginning of the season. And we had plenty of talks of like we asked each other like, "Yo, do you want to be here?" And we both was like, "Yeah." Like, and he was like, "Bro, I don't understand." And I was like, "Man, this. If you really think about it, we've had way more success together." Then, this year and what we didn't accomplish last year. JB's been in 3 conference finals. I've been in 2. And like you said, I think we're both still very far from our prime. And I think what people don't understand is like, all right, if you want to break us up, the grass is not always greener. Like, there's not a lot of guys in the NBA like JB. Like, so, or if you want to get rid of me, like, not to toot my own horn, but I think I'm one of the best players. So I couldn't imagine why you wouldn't want to have 2 of the best players that are under 25, on your team. And yeah, there are certain rough patches throughout a season, but we've won way more games together than we've lost.
And not one mention of Marcus Smart. Chris, your thoughts?
So it doesn't matter really what we think, right? And by the way, I've been vocal about it this year. Like, I don't want to break these guys up. I see that as a last resort. Now, the one thing that it seems like, you know, J.J. Redick. I, by the way, I love when former players who do stuff like this with, like, the media. J.J. Redick, you are the media
right
now, okay?
You've stepped over that line.
You stepped over that line. And the one thing he, if he were a real media member and knew what the F he was doing, he would have asked is he would have said, like, yeah, but, you know, there's some, isn't there some redundancy in your games? But he didn't do that. But fine. He doesn't do that. The most important thing there is that Tatum and Brown want to stay together because you know how the NBA works. When moves happen, it's not the teams. Like, it's not going to be the Celtics saying we have to blow it up with these two guys. It's going to be one of these guys indicating they want out. That's what happened with Harden in Brooklyn. So the most important thing you take from that podcast and from the statement of Jason Tatum is that he and Brown want to play together and are still committed to each other. That's huge for the Celtics.
And did you find it telling, like I did, though, that there was no mention of Marcus Smart? Even though, you know, I think Marcus Smart, I think it's evident at this point because he's the longest tenured Celtic,
yeah,
looks at him as on their level. But it was just him and JB. Like, it's him and Jaylen Brown.
Well, I mean, look, yeah. I mean, I think unlike most of the rest of the Celtics organization, Jason Tatum is a realist and sees it clearly that it's he and Brown. It's the two of them, right, up top, and then everybody else below. And he's right in that. But the rest of the organization, for some reason, they let Marcus Smart get away with this foolishness that it's like a big three. But I think what's interesting is when Jason Tatum did talk about Marcus Smart in this podcast, and I don't know if you're planning to play that cut or not, but it was after that Chicago loss when he talked about Tatum and Brown and not passing enough. The way he talked about Smart and this podcast was basically the idea that, you know, I don't want to say he forced him to, but he basically confronted Smart and got an apology out of him.
Yeah, B-Rob's on the phone, so I would... B-Rob, can you pull up that clip? It is Tatum 9, the reaction to Marcus Smart, if you can hit that.
What was your sort of reaction, individually, of course, and I you can address if your team talked about it, but what was your sort of reaction individually when Marcus made those comments earlier in the season about you and JB and you guys needing to pass the ball?
It caught me off guard, for sure. And I think what you have to, I guess, understand, I think, with being in the NBA is, especially sometimes after, you know, we had just blown a 18-point lead or something to Chicago. Like, this is the beginning of the season. We probably, like, 2-5. You know, everybody's frustrated. We all on edge a little bit. So when I seen it, I was, like, I seen it. I wasn't angry. I wasn't mad or anything. I just waited till the next day. And I saw Smart at the facility. And we sat down and talked. And I think it was a very, it was a great talk, actually. You know, we'd had some time to sleep. You know, the adrenaline was gone from the game. And, you know, he apologized for, you know, what he said and, you know, that was something he shouldn't have said in the media and that they got his words mixed up or whatever. And I didn't take offense. You know, I started off by saying, listen, bro, I'm not perfect. Like, I make mistakes. I still got a long way to go from where I'm trying to get to. But, you know, I think we ended the conversation on, you know, we in this together. We're all on the same team and we trying to figure it out. And, you know, obviously saying certain things like that in the media doesn't help anybody's case because obviously that's all they talked about for the next week or so when it was referring to Celtics, but wasn't the end of the world. No harm, was no foul, and, you know, we're past it now.
It just feels to me, again, like I hear something like that, and I don't think they're wrong to feel this way, that between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they look at Marcus Smart and like, dude, you're not on our level. Like, we don't want to even hear anything.
It's like, what are you doing? You know, I'm glad Tatum sort of, you know, brought it up to him. And he said that Smart can, you know, apologize. The one thing I'll just say is, like, you know, Smart, oh, the media, nobody, your words were clear and direct. Nobody twisted them. You spoke out of school. You said something you shouldn't have said. Man up and own it. What you did was idiotic and you shouldn't have done it. The end. you know, none of this, like, the media's fault. They twisted my words. Nobody twisted your words. You basically put it out there that those guys needed to pass more and that you needed to have the ball more down the stretch instead of them. That's what happened. And as evidenced by the apology that he gave to Jason Tatum, he knew he shouldn't have said it and it was the wrong thing to say. Or, look, you want to say what you want to say in terms of those guys needing to pass more. It wasn't the appropriate format to say it. In terms of saying it publicly, and if that's part of the apology, I acknowledge, you know, that. Good on Smart. And also just the way he presented it. But none of this, the media mixed. The media didn't mix up his words. He said what he said. It was pretty clear. He spoke out of school. He shouldn't have done it. It was disruptive. And ultimately, that's why I'm not the biggest Smart guy, because at the end of the day, I think he is disruptive. He's disruptive with as disruptive as he is on the court, in a good way, to the other team. I mean, he's a pest. He plays his butt off, right? I think behind the scenes, he's sort of disruptive because he has this thing in his mind that he's a better player than he really is, and that he's sort of, again, part of this core of the team when it's like you're really not.
Yeah, and you mentioned the redundancy on the floor with the addition of Derek White. Does that feel to you like this offseason Marcus Smart is as good as gone, finally?
I mean, I think one of them is. I think it's what I like that Brad did is those are similar players in a lot of ways, and it gives him options. Marcus Smart is playing some of the best basketball of his career, and if he has trade value this offseason, they now are in a position where they can move on from him and not lose everything that he gives to the team, which is helpful and very important, and we've seen that during the stretch winning 9 out of 10. Or maybe Derek White's the guy that ends up going. Either way, they've given themselves some flexibility. And they have some assets now, some guys that I think they can turn, you know, into something to try and improve the team. Now, I don't know I don't think either one of those guys is going to be the tent pole to acquiring a third star. I think that's asking a little bit much. But I still think you could leverage those guys and leverage some depth into having assets to make a trade to improve your basketball team.
Nate in Boston on Jason Tatum. You're first up here on the Sports Hub Celtics show this afternoon. Hey, Nate.
Hey, guys. So first, before I get to my point, to B-Rob's point, I did watch the game last night, the Rising Stars. It was actually a good product. I was surprised. Guys actually cared. It was competitive. I think that's the problem with the All-Star game, that like when I used to watch like old ones from 2001 with like Iverson, those games were competitive, and that's what made the game entertaining, but now guys are just there to whatever. I don't know. But to my point, so I'm getting a bit annoyed with the Jason Tatum narrative that, you know, just because he cares about the regular season records or he cares about, you know, making All-NBA, he doesn't care about winning for two reasons. Number one being it's an 82-game season. I mean, to say to a guy in October, you know, none of this really matters until June, like, what do you expect these guys to do? It's a long season. And number two, this is kind of to Felger's point yesterday, that guys like Bird and Magic and Jordan, they were wired different. I mean, that's a load of crap. I mean, Bird cared so much about his single-season scoring record that when Mikhail broke it, a couple of games later, he went to go break it. I recently watched Kareem break the scoring record. It was pretty much what happened with Steph Curry. They stopped the game. Like, media rushed the court like it was March Madness. They made a whole big deal out of it. And even with Jordan, his motivation in beating the Jazz was when Karl Malone won MVP over him. So these guys definitely do care about these regular season accolades. I don't think it's you care about one and you don't care about the other. So that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Nate. Do we make too much of, I guess, you know, what is looked at as selfishness in terms of individual records and statistics for guys like Tatum when they talk about that kind of thing?
I mean, look, I think it's more about him being a young player in the league, and that's I don't think it's just something that's unique to Jason Tatum. I think a lot of young guys in the league, they come in, they want to establish themselves individually first. Now, I think, you know, the situation with Bird and the scoring record, it was a thing where he basically was needling McHale and was like, you should have gone for 60, you know, and then he went for 60. Like, that was Bird finding a way to entertain himself during the regular season, which was a little bit of monotony to him. Bird, Magic, and Jordan were all wired different than Tatum. I mean, that's just a fact. Tatum's not wired like those guys. He's not wired like Kobe. That doesn't mean that he doesn't care at all. He does care, but I think clearly there's a level of concern for a lot of these individual things, and I think he'll eventually grow out of that once he gets these individual things. But I've said this to you for years and years and years. You'd have the perfect player if you could take Tatum's skill set and Jaylen Brown's personality, because Jaylen Brown is a killer. You know, that is the way he is on the court. Tatum, to me, doesn't have that.
More of your calls on the Celtics at 617-779-0985. Coming up here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on the home of the Seas. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's time to talk Celtics.
Man, hotter than fish grease now.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, just as an aside, as we come back here with Dua Lipa, Sports Hub Celtics Show. 98.5 of Sports Hub. She was in town last night at TD Garden. I got no gas in the tank on a Friday night, Chris. Couldn't do it. I thought about it. I looked at StubHub. I was like, yeah, maybe I'll bring the wife. We'll do this. I'm like, Friday night, late night. And by late, I mean like 11 o'clock. I can't hack it. So I hope you guys had a good time if you saw Dua Lipa.
Oh, really? So I wanted to see. I didn't know that was last night. Is she coming anywhere near the area again?
Yeah, you know what? What the hell? It's a lazy Saturday. Let's look it up real quick.
Let's do it.
Dua Lipa tour. I can't imagine. I mean, she's big enough. I thought she would have done two nights. But
I would have thought she would have done two nights as well.
Future Nostalgia Tour. What the hell date are we on now? Oh, maybe that was the last tour, last show in the States, maybe?
It looks like her next date is Monday in Belmont, New York at the Islanders Arena.
Oh, well, there you go. You want to head to the island, that's the next time you can see her.
She's at Madison Square Garden on the 1st.
Very talented and also not unattractive. I'm sure that was a hell of a
show. She's a good follow on Instagram, too, because she posts, like, normal stuff. Like, she just seems like a normal person, you know?
Yes, but, you know, the stars, they're just like us, Chris. You know, like...
It's true.
Johnny in Brooklyn with a thought on the Celtics and the luxury tax. Go ahead. This should be interesting. Go ahead, Johnny. You're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
What's up, guys? Thanks so much for taking my call. Yeah, I'll just be quick. You know, I think it's a year where there may be an opportunity for the Celtics to sneak in. And what's really could come back to bite them is their lack of depth, which was mandated essentially by Wick to have them get under the luxury tax. And so, you know, I think that really, really sucks, quite frankly. If they had a little bit more depth a couple of years ago, they probably beat Miami. And this year, with a little bit more depth, they might make it actually out of the East. I really like where they're at. I just the player short, and that was basically because Wick wanted to make a little bit more money. You guys are the best. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Johnny.
So I defer to B-Rob on that one. I mean, obviously, we remember last year with the Daniel Tice deal, it was very much about getting under the luxury tax, and they were able to do that again but add some talent. I mean, where do you think they're at in terms of the luxury tax?
See, I think Brad Stevens this year was able to thread the needle. In terms, I think the team got better at the trade deadline, and they also got under the tax, which I think should have been the ultimate goal here. Like, Derek White is better than Richardson, and I think we've talked about it. Like, would you rather have Peyton Pritchard or Schroeder out there? Like, you probably want to see the young guy. So you did that. You got Tice back. They added some more money for next year. I think next year's a big thing. If they can add another piece next offseason, then they have to be a tax team. They have to start spending. But for what they did at the trade deadline now, I don't have an issue with it at all.
And is that going to be on the table? I mean, young guys typically don't win NBA championships with other young guys. You need an established veteran. Next year, Bradley Beal is going to be 29 going into his 11th season. Damian Lillard, 32, going into his 11th season as well. I mean, those are the types of established veterans that I think maybe Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown need. Is that – I mean, people have been talking about this for months. Like, they're going to get Beal, be in on Bradley Beal. Is that realistic for them this offseason?
I think it's on the table because Derek White's another tradable contract. And so – for a guy like Beal or another star that they might go after that we don't know is available yet, they're going to have to push their way to Boston because the Celtics don't have the assets, obviously, outbid other teams. But if these teams, if Beal or whoever says, hey, I'm going to go to Boston or I'm walking away for nothing, like Washington will deal with you, and then you can make that happen. They have the deals on the books to make something like that happen.
And you could also try and bring in a third team,
sure,
potentially, to try and make the offer better and sort of, you know, talent and sort of do it that way. I sort of wonder, I'm just throwing a random name out here, but Beal and Lillard are obviously established stars. Those are the guys you shoot for. But I think it might be somebody who's more like mid-tier, like a Colin Sexton or somebody like that, where, you know, he's coming back from the ACL, where maybe you bring in somebody like that who has third star potential, and that's sort of your upgrade, as opposed to going for that established, already considered all-star sort of guy.
Devin and Lynn, you're next here on the Sports Up Celtics show. Hey, Devin.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to kind of dispute the caller you had from the last segment there, where he compared these guys to Bird and Magic and Jordan for all wanting to chase statistics. The one thing those guys all had were championships, and when they were chasing after individual statistics, it wasn't really getting in the way of them winning like these guys are.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I remember. I mean, I'm old enough to remember. I mean, I agree with, you know, this most recent caller and disagree with the first caller, but I understand what he's saying. I'm old enough to remember when Jordan was this guy that you're like, oh yeah, he scores a lot of points, but he doesn't win anything.
Yeah, they called him a Hun.
You know, remember that? Yeah. I mean, that was sort of the thing. You know, Bird and Magic were a little bit different. Obviously, they won pretty early in their careers. And the difference, here's the difference, I would say, when you start comparing Tatum to those guys. You knew for a fact with Bird and Magic, like a big part of their games was they made the guys around them better. We don't know that with Tatum. That's still outstanding. That's still a part of his game he has to work on. And when I say outstanding, I mean, I don't mean it's outstanding as in very well. I mean, yeah, it's like outstanding, and we don't know whether he can do it yet. And so that's very different. And Jordan was just an entirely different animal, but, you know, he didn't win Jack until Scottie Pippen showed up. So it's just different. I think you got to be a little careful when you start sort of making this thing and looking at the individual accolades of all-time great players and saying, well, okay, that means they're the same as Jason Tatum from an attitude standpoint, because they're not. But I also think you have to be careful in sort of singling out Tatum. I don't think Tatum is all that unusual among this generation of young players in that he cares about this stuff and that he's trying to establish himself individually first. I think that's sort of just the way the league is now. I don't think it's some personality flaw of Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's just the league now. It's brand first,
yeah,
titles later.
Yeah.
It's about getting the sneaker deal. It's about getting the Lay's potato chips. Underrated, by the way. Those Flaming Hot Barbecue, very delicious.
Really?
Oh, they're great. But boy, when you eat them, Chris, it looks like you have... it's like you've, you know, like done, it's like you've gone to Mars and just, you know, you see the red clay, at least that they show in the movies, like you got it all over your hands, you can't get it off, but a great chip. But that's, it's just, he's not the anomaly there. You're right. Like, that's just the league now. It's about establishing, you know, yourself as a brand and then worrying about a title later. If it comes, it comes. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. It just, you know, old guys, old heads like us, they're like, ah, it shouldn't be that way. It should be about,
yeah,
the title.
I mean, I wish it were different, but Tatum, I think, we'll get to a point in his career where he realizes that there's nothing better for his brand than winning a championship. And a lot of these guys get to a point. Look at like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. Now, Kevin Garnett always cared about winning. So, you know, yeah, I'm not saying, but there was a point in their careers where it's like they had done all these other things, and the one thing missing on their resume was a championship. And Tatum might get to that point where it's like, I've done all these other things. The one thing I need is that championship.
We'll get to more commentary from both Tatum and Smart on the Old Man and the Three podcast. We do have some of that Smart sound in the system, Chris, as it turns out. I didn't think we did. But we'll get to that in the final segment of Sports Hub Celtic Show coming up next.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sports Hub Celtics Show drives the lane.
No. Scoring and the foul.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show and Boston's home for the Celtics. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Can you remember a time in your career where a conference felt as wide open as the Eastern Conference this year?
It'd actually be for me. I forgot what year it was that LeBron beat us in game 7.
18.
So 18 was probably that for us. We definitely thought that we had a great chance. And to this day, we still thought if we went to the championship instead of LeBron and those guys, we definitely would have beat Golden State that year.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, let's all applaud Delusion. Yeah, oh, yeah, oh, no. Yes, Marcus Smart. You go to the finals that year, you definitely beat Golden State. The same Golden State team that swept Cleveland, the team that you lost to in the Eastern Conference Finals. Okay, because what? You played competitive regular season games against Golden State Warriors, and they were all very entertaining.
Yeah, no, they always played the Warriors tough. But
regular season and the playoffs are a completely different animal.
Exactly, because those regular season games meant more to the Celtics, whereas the postseason games would mean more to the Warriors.
And that is some of Marcus Smart with J.J. Redick from the Old Man in the Three podcast. Yeah, I mean, it's just they just don't get it. Like that to me, all these years later, Chris, like they haven't – there is not a lot of humility there. Like that they still think to this day, like, no, we would have won that finals. Are you kidding me?
Well, it's just interesting the way, you know, he's sort of just talking about it. I mean, obviously, you know, you're up in the series 3-2. You blow that lead. You lose on your own court in Game 7. You only score 79 points in the game. And then the biggest thing that stands out when you start talking about, well, we would have beaten, Golden State. How? You shot 7 of 39 from three in Game 7 against the Celtics, and you got clowned by Jeff Green.
Right.
Jeff Green dropped 19 points on you in that game, and you shot, again, 7 of 39 from three. So it's like, oh, yeah, you know, if we'd won that game. Well, there's a reason you didn't win that game. Because you weren't a good enough team. You weren't a good enough shooting team. But if we want to play the what if game, well, what if you didn't get out of the first round against Milwaukee? What if Milwaukee had home court in that series instead of you?
There was another clip you wanted to play from this. Actually, B-Rob could pull it up off your computer if you just want to play it, Chris. Do you still have it up?
I do still have it up.
Yeah,
you want me to just play it?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on a second. Let me try and get it.
You're on your laptop.
Yeah, I'm on my laptop. I'm not on. I was going to say you can play it off my computer.
Oh, never mind.
I didn't think so. You know what I'll do? We will play it when we come back from break. I will send it to B-Rob right now. But it speaks to what we're talking about, which is just the delusion of Marcus Smart at times, and how he gets away with some of this stuff, and how they just don't like check him on it. It's like, dude, I admire how competitive you are. I admire how much you believe in yourself. But they just need to check that a little bit. There needs to be like a little reality check. And, you know, we're going to play this clip, hopefully, when we come back, after the Sports Hub Celtics show at 1. But I'll just give you a little, like, preview of it. Basically, he's talking about his shooting. And he says, you know, I'm not the best shooter. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Like, he acknowledges that. And then he goes, well, hold on. But, you know, don't forget, I hold the franchise record for threes in a game.
Oh, God.
And it's like, that's true. That is true. But it's, you know, it's sort of the old, broken clock is right twice a day deal. And, you know, it's funny because Jackie Bradley Jr. and Marcus Smart get compared a lot. And I ran into Jackie Bradley Jr. I'm going to name check here. I ran into Jackie Bradley Jr. at the Rams Super Bowl party.
Oh.
After the Super Bowl. He had flown out there for the game. I didn't know this about Jackie. He's a huge Rams fan, and he has been since he was a kid growing up in Richmond, Virginia. And I asked him how that came to be, and he said, I like the Rams. I think he was a big Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt guy. So he was at the party, really happy that his team won. And I was just talking to him. And he just carries himself with such a level of humility. And, you know, obviously they're similar guys in terms of what they've done. But Marcus Smart talks about himself like he's an all-star. Jackie Bradley actually made an all-star team. He actually has been an all-star.
Yeah.
Whereas Marcus Smart Marcus Smart's never been an all-star,
right.
And he never will be. But he talks about himself like he is a multiple-time all-star, whereas Jackie talks about himself like a guy who is a role player, knows he has a good skill set in certain areas, and in some other areas he, you know, does his best. He thinks he should get more credit than he does, but he knows he's not David Ortiz. And that's the difference between the two guys. They're both beloved Boston role players, but one guy carries himself with the proper amount of humility relative to what his standing is in the organization, where the other guy carries himself like his number's going to be in the rafters like the moment he retires.
So what do you think that is? Because he was a relatively high draft pick, that the organization and the fan base pump him up too much, that he's the longest tenured Celtic.
Things play into it. Yeah, I say this all the time. You know, you got to remember he was a lottery pick. He was the number 6 pick in the draft. But I think they've enabled him all along. And I think a lot of it is the fact that he's like still here and that they've signed him to multiple contract extensions. I mean, if you're him, you look at it, you say, well, no
they
one
believe
can
in me.
They, but not only that, but like they can't find anyone to do what I do. And so what I do is so valuable that I therefore am so valuable.
So what do you think happens with them coming out of the All-Star break? So they got Brooklyn next Thursday. And at the beginning of March, got a couple of tough games on the slate. Atlanta, who has had their number, even though they had that comeback win last Sunday, and then Memphis, who's been one of the better teams this year. Do they, you know, do they hold on to being pissed from losing to Detroit the way that they let that game slip away, or and you know, go on another nice little winning streak here? They're competitive in the East, or do they slip back and revert to their ways? Where do you think that this thing look? How does this look for the next couple of weeks coming out of the All-Star break?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there's still some easy games there. You know, you have a bunch of matchups with Indiana, and I know their new look because they got my guy Tyrese Halliburton, but they're trying to figure it out. I don't think it looks like 9 out of 10, but I would expect them to play like 600 basketball based on this schedule. You know, you get Detroit, you get Indiana here. I'm just looking at it real quick. I mean, there's two games with Detroit between now and March the 11th. You have Indiana on the 27th, and you have Indiana again on April the 1st. So there are some tough games, obviously, in between. I think we're going to learn a lot about them. The stretch that starts, you know, they got a Sunday national TV game against Dallas on the 13th, and then you have to go out west for four straight against Golden State, Sacramento, Denver, Oklahoma. You come home, you play Utah. That little 10-day stretch there, I think that's going to tell us a lot about this team. You know, it's 10 days, it's six games, starting with Dallas, ending with Utah, and with a four-game West Coast swing sandwiched in between. I think that's sort of where the rubber's going to meet the road for them.
All right, we have that clip ready to go from Marcus Smart from the old man in the group. Go ahead there, B-Rob.
Definitely. I mean, we can sit here and talk about my shooting. We can start with that. I mean, you know, probably, you know, not the best shooter in the world. You know, it's okay. But
your form's great.
Form's amazing. Let's get that. Form's amazing. You know, on any given night, I could be a problem for you. You know, so just be ready. And let's not forget, I still hold the record for most threes in the game in self-shooting.
All right.
Just saying.
And what's with the crowd, too?
This was live. This was at the Wilbur.
Oh, a bunch of ass kissers. Oh, that's why. All right. I didn't know that part of it. No wonder why you're getting that kind of reaction. Like, just keep playing into it, everybody.
But can we play a little more there? Because he goes on to talk about, you know, why he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Can you pick it up a little more? Just pick it up from there, B-Rob.
People have guys that they like more than others. So no matter what those guys do, they're always going to be right. No matter what the other guys do, they're always going to be wrong. And that's just what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not him. It's not any limitations in his game. It's us.
Yeah.
We're the problem. We just don't appreciate the all-star that is Marcus Smart.
Oh, my God. It's just it is. It's the combination of all those things. And I think maybe the biggest culprit of all is that the organization and the fan base has just pumped him up to have him have this idea that he's more of what he is.
They fetishize him. I've said that. The things he does are unique, and they're really – and they do contribute to winning. Like, he's a guy I would want on my team. It's just that it's been fetishized to the point where it means more than it does. It's the same thing people here did with Rondo. They mistake unique for elite. Somebody can have a unique style of play, but that doesn't mean that they're an elite player. And I don't know. I mean, look, obviously if you're in that crowd and you paid money to go see like J.J. Redick do his thing with the podcast, like, you know, they're cheering as much for J.J. Redick as they are for Marcus Smart. But just that reaction, like, to me, that says everything about the enabling that happens with him around here.
B-Rob, what was the latest on that injury? I know, you know, obviously he and Robert Williams didn't play on Wednesday, but it looked pretty bad when he had to leave against Philadelphia. Is he going to be ready to go post-All-Star break? Or
Ime said it wasn't a long-term thing. So does that mean he's going to be ready on Thursday? I mean, a week, that could still be considered short-term. So it wouldn't be surprise me if he needs another week, but he'll definitely be back in March. So the question is, I assume Rob Williams will definitely be back for Brooklyn, and then Smart, I'd say that's a 50-50 standpoint in terms of how he heals up.
All right, let's wrap up Sports Up Celtics show with Tommy and Lynn. Hello, Tommy.
What's up, boys? All right, Murray and Gasper. This is what I got to say about the Celtics. With all the trades that they did, I want to know how far can this team go in the East, and how far can they contend? Are they a contender in the East for a championship? And also, Murray, I know someone that knows you, acquaintance that he met you before at a place that you always go to in Melrose. And I'll shout out his dad. His dad told me.
Oh.
Really love it. You met his son. I love it. At a restaurant that you go in Melrose. You know the place you always go to? You go to spot?
Patroni's, maybe?
Yes. Yes, you met a love it in there. And you guys were talking about me not too long ago.
Oh.
And
Tommy yeah. talk is always good.
Well, I'm sure I said only nice things, Tommy, because you're one of our finest callers. Thank you very much.
Tommy, well, keeping tabs on the kid, huh?
Where do they go? I think they should win a couple of rounds. Maybe I'm a sucker for believing that, but I bought it in this 9-game winning streak. I think the East stinks. They should win a couple of rounds.
So you think so let me rephrase that for you, because you're like a casual, like, yeah, they should win a couple of rounds. You think they should be in the Eastern Conference Finals? You think they're a Final Four NBA team?
I do. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bring back the C's train.
Yeah, all aboard. No, but will they win a title this year? No. No, but if they added Beal or someone like that next year, no, they should be. It's just, I think the league feels down too, Chris. Like, you know, as good as Phoenix has looked at times, and same with Golden State, I think it's as wide open as I can remember it. There's no real prohibitive favorite to me in the NBA this year to win the title.
I think it's just, look, we're going through the sort of monotony of the regular season. It's a slog. It's a grind. A lot of these teams, I think, are pointing to just, can we get our guys healthy for the postseason? And I just think the postseason in the NBA is different. It's just, you know, 7-game series. I think teams, like, for example, I think a lot of people now are counting out Brooklyn. I'm not going to count them out. Durant comes back healthy. It seems like they're going to drop this vax thing in New York, potentially, for Kyrie. And if Ben Simmons can get back, plus, I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but they have a rookie in Cam Thomas who's pretty good. So yeah, he is. B-Rob said, I mean, he is lighting it up. I still like their roster better than their roster. And they're just trying to weather the storm. They're kind of like the 2010 Celtics at this point, right? Where they're like, we just want all our guys to be healthy at the finish line, and then, you know, we'll turn it on from there. And I wouldn't bet against them turning it on. So I don't know. I just look at it and I think I love what the Celtics did at the trade deadline. I think Brad was really active. I think he upgraded the team both in the now and for the future. But I still can't look at them and say, like, this is a team I expect to land in the Eastern Conference Finals. I expect to be among the final four teams in the NBA.
The fun part about the Brooklyn situation, they could be in the play-in game still and have everyone back, which is absolutely wild.
Oh, yeah.
Because, if the Celtics keep winning, they have a 3-game lead on the Nets right now. And so, you know, if they win that game on Thursday when they come back, that's a pretty big edge over the last 20 games or so.
All right, we'll get to the headlines here and then get into the final hour of Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. What we'll talk about, I don't know, because, you know, this is like a dead time of year. This is arguably one of the worst times of the year, I think, as a super sports fan. Like, you get NBA All-Star break, and then you wait till March Madness, kind of a desolate wasteland. You're, you know, knuckle deep into the NHL.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.